Hey, this is the PhD cast, which this week is brought to you by the number 92 and the letter D. We're talking discounts, departures and diets as news of a 92% media agency discount to clients is talked about as Kyle and Daffy O depart from the Today Show and Fitness First partner with Mardi Gras. This is the D episode of the PhD cast. Joining me on the PhD cast this week are PhD cast regulars, Christian.
Hello.
And Stu.
Hi.
And Nicola.
Hi.
And a rare treat for the PhD cast. We're joined by, it's only our head of trading, National Head of Trading, Lucy Formosa Morgan.
Woohoo! Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
UK. It'll become apparent why you're here. Has everybody had good weeks?
Yes.
Yeah, really.
I had food poisoning, but apart from that, I'm fine.
But you only had food poisoning at the start of the week, right?
Yes, exactly. So I'm much better now, ready for the weekend.
Excellent. Well, be careful what you eat. And how's everybody else doing?
All good. Really good.
Awesome.
Right, very good. Let's crack on. Talk is spreading about a 92% discount recently being promised to a client. This is according to a report in Ad News this week. Rumour has it, the media agency offered an unheard of 92% discount on TV rates in order to win a recent pitch. Ad News quite rightly asks, is the race to the bottom accelerating as the agency model comes under pressure and brands turn the screw? One source said, it's the lowest discount I've ever seen. It's just unheard of. Lucy, is that unheard of?
Yes, in the 90s, I would say yes. You know, the discount would be off market, so there's a bit of question as to what that actual discount would be off each of the agency rates.
So if anyone, if you're not massively familiar with this, when you say off market, it would mean off the biggest possible, the most you would pay for that rate.
So so the agents, the network would have a market rate card. They then give us a variation of that, depending on what trading group you belong to. They don't publish that rate card, you know, in terms of the market card, so it's a bit of a pinch of salt.
So no one actually knows what an unnegotiated TV spot costs.
So it's a bit of a pinch of salt goes with it. So, you know, 92% could vary slightly, but yes, it's a massive discount. You know, and the buying exercises that you have to do for pitches, you know, at the end of the day, they're just after a massive number. And in this case, whoever it was, you know, has gone to town with the numbers that they've put on it.
Gone to town, definitely.
So the suggestion is that that this practice of discounting to win business, it is as old as the business itself. Is that true? Has this always been the case? And to what extent are we genuinely seeing an escalation in the arms race on this?
There have always been buying exercises, there have always been, you know, discounts that you got to put forward, but yes, it's certainly escalated from a, you know, what discount you were looking at previously to, if you want to win the business, what else can you give us?
Yeah, and there's a lot more transparency in some respects around it as well. So I've been involved in pitches where there have been bidding around certain buying exercises, so live bidding.
There's one in play, right?
Yeah, you're competing with another agency and you're literally going, well, I'd pay for that craziness.
Yeah.
So it's like an auction.
It's like a reverse auction for
the client's business.
So you see the colours, if you're red or green, whether you're ahead or behind.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy. And then in terms of the transparency point, we're getting a lot of clients saying, we just want a cheaper deal. It's all about costs and having that really clear in the brief. And then the other point of transparency is around separating the buying and the strategy function. So quite often we get a strategic task, and then it's allocated how valuable that is in terms of winning the overall business. I mean that's obviously as true as accurate as they're letting themselves be. But
yes, so you've got to trust that when a client says the strategic response will be weighted to 40% of your response, you've got to trust they will weight it to 40% of the response. It's not just an icing on the cake exercise when actually they just want to screw to get the cheapest.
But you've also got to think that, you know, if you're doing down and dirty CPMs, which 92% will certainly get you back in the week or something.
if in the week at all, it might be.
Yeah, but you're going to get the sales. So, you know, it's all very well getting the CPM, but you can actually get the sales as well.
Also, quality, the quality implications of that kind of rate is going to.
Friday night movie.
Yeah, it's going to be. No one's going to see it. Brilliant. So, yeah.
And so, broader implications. I mean, this. To what extent can this commoditization, and to what extent can the margins that are being removed from agencies continue? Is this just the way the game is played now, or will there be a straw that breaks the camel's back, do we think?
No, I would love it to change, but clients, to be honest, aren't going to change. You know, if they're being offered, just for numbers' sake, a $15 CPM, are they really going to want to accept a 20?
And who would?
Yeah.
Unless they've got quality benchmarks in place.
Yeah.
So what's the role of auditors in all of this? Because presumably, if you're buying, I mean, to give us an idea, if you're buying media at 92% discount, it's the equivalent of buying a cup of coffee for 30 cents, a bottle of vodka for $6.40, getting an insight into media land now, or paying $1.60 for a Big Mac. I mean, that you wouldn't get any of those things in the real world because you simply wouldn't get any kind of quality. What is the role of auditing in ensuring the quality that what's being bought is up to scratch?
Well, I think it's up to the agency as well to educate that it's not just about cost. I think auditors are there just to make sure that what you're saying you're doing is being done. So I don't think it's just an auditor perspective.
But I totally buy this. There's some responsibility for agencies here. But imagine we're in a client and you've got a marketer sat with procurement, and procurement says you should go with the person that can buy you cheapest freaking chips media. That marketing person is going to say, oh yeah, I've got my agency, so they can explain why it should cost more. Surely in a marketer's vocabulary, they can say there's got to be a certain cost I pay in order to get a certain quality of media in order to meet marketing and business objectives.
Well, that's
where
you've got sales.
And we've got to educate marketers around that, because a lot of them still don't get that. And also, don't forget, this market, we're quite often part of a global alignment, so the deal will be done with procurement globally, and we'll have to submit a template, that'll be our costs, and that'll just get filtered down the system, so it's not that we're doing kind of local control.
You'd like to think that that's where sales figures come into it, that if sales aren't coming in because you've changed into this just cheap and dirty, you know, approach, that you know, if sales start dropping off, they start to revise that approach and start to put quality back.
The challenge with that is that we know that kind of marketing and communications is quite a weak lever, so it's really hard to kind of assign a really clear correlation unless you've got a econometric study.
Yeah.
So
and
sales fact is never.
Yeah, and the fact
really
is certainly
clear.
In FMCG at the moment, now you could spend $2 million on a campaign, and you could buy nothing but Teeny Tots and Dora the Explorer. But you can go to Coles and Woolies and say, I'm buying a $2 million TV campaign, and they'll go, fine, have some distribution. And it's distribution that's going to be the driver of sales and ultimate business objectives.
Yeah,
I think it can also impact on the service as well that client will be getting, because for the agency to recoup from that discount, potentially they're not going to be able to put as many people on that account to service the client. So then potentially, although the output from a quality point of view could be impaired, it's also an actual, you know, from day to day, have I got the right service? I got the right FTE that's on my business, which, again, I don't think would come into a procurement.
I don't think a lot of clients understand how costs work in media. So, I mean, a lot of people in media agencies don't necessarily know how we make money.
Quite
that's worrying. True. Worryingly, exactly. But I just don't think a lot of clients are actually fully aware of how we make money, what cost implications there are, like things like how that affects people working in their business. They're just not geared up. And they don't have a time in their own justification to be able to understand all that. So it's for us to, as an industry, MFA opportunity and role potentially to go in there and tell people this is how we make money, this is how we need to operate in order to keep those margins and be sustainable. Otherwise, it will impact.
But you'd have to
business.
Have the whole market, you know, all the agencies would have to be aligned, otherwise, you get one rogue ranks and just say,
oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, they always will be
yeah,
the
yeah.
rogue agency, the rogue network that will turn around and do something as cheap
so,
as chips.
So
because
they play a dirty move and
yeah.
get
the other thing for me is like, what about the poor other clients in this agency group? So if
yeah.
you've got one client that's got a 97% discount, how's that going to impact your own rates as a smaller client in that bigger network or that bigger agency? Because that has to be washed through the system somewhere.
So for anyone who doesn't isn't familiar with this, the bottom line is that in order to pay less to say any say a given network, in order to pay less for that client for that network, you've got to pay more somewhere else because as an agency you're going to commit a certain amount to a network.
It's
so
just taking off Peter to give to Paul,
exactly.
really, isn't it?
And you just basically want to be the client that's Paul rather than Peter.
Mm, yeah.
But it's also, I think, we put all the responsibility on our shoulders, which is fine to an extent because we are the one who offered this discount. And
when you say we, obviously
don't mean
PhD.
It
was
not us.
Disclaimer.
It's just whoever offers
yeah,
this.
Just
actually,
like, it is a transparency.
So you offer it only once. This is a client that you win once because then I would think that you are actually not able to actually use the same discount again on one hand. On the other hand, there's another aspect as well that you said as well that if you are actually paying less for one client, you have to pay more for another. But it's again, it's the responsibility of the media owner, I think, as well.
But you feel sorry for the media owners,
yeah.
though, because yeah, agencies, one of them, you know, who would input numbers into a buying exercise, and we're expecting the media to then deliver it.
Yeah,
well,
this is.
Let's talk about the media owners because let's follow the money, right? Clients pay less money going through agencies. The buck is stopping, or the buck is not stopping, I suppose, with the media owner. And to what extent have media owners and publishers given this behaviour credence by allowing it to happen? I mean, they've allowed this game to be played, and now it's coming back to bite them.
I feel sorry for them as well because I mean, if you're a publisher and you've got this massive network who is say 30% of your profit, turning around saying
or more,
we need this because otherwise we won't spend with you, then you're actually risking a lot of your margin by not complying. So
yeah,
so if
30 or 40% of our revenues were under threat, that would be one hell of a deal as a business.
We'd really have to think about how we tackle that and approach it. And because of the sheer scale, the consolidation that's happened in the marketplace, we've now got that where you've got a big network turning to media owners and actually really putting them under the thumb because they can from a sheer kind of profit point of view.
But for 92% discount, you'd expect them to say no.
If they didn't, I would be really annoyed with them, and they deserve to.
Well, it's one hell of a bed to make, isn't it? If you're going to give someone what you produce at 8% of the cost that it's worth in the market, you're making quite a bed for yourself.
Yeah. Totally.
Where'd you go from there?
Yeah.
Well, 93% is presumably.
And you say that's a joke, but that's basically what's going to happen. It's a spiral. It's an escalation.
Yeah,
so once someone's done that, it's going to happen.
So how far away?
Free media.
So what even beyond that? When do we get to the point that we pay clients for their budget?
God, hopefully.
Well, that's an interesting.
Because essentially, media owners would pay us for our clients.
Everyone's a business, though. Everyone's running a business. There has to be some profit margin in it. It's just working out what. Yeah.
What do
you
mean?
And our business model is obviously changing, and ultimately they're now being remunerated in a different way than they were getting remunerated 10 years ago versus 20 years ago. So there's clearly a 10-year business strategy for these guys, and maybe they just think that they've got an affordable period where they can suck up something right now because there'll be something around the corner. I don't know, I'm just trying to find some sort of like positive.
But there's always, as you said, this has always been going on, so it's not a new thing. There's always been a race to the bottom, so it's not like and I'd really like to know how kind of they forecast.
It was a slower race.
Yeah.
And it's just been
accelerated.
Accelerated.
But it's interesting you asked the question about kind of like remuneration and how that changed. Because if we change our model, do we ask payments, ask clients for their money? Because if we get them to pay us for different stuff, not the commoditized areas around trading and stuff that we're getting to the base, but like strategy, thought processes, and IP effectively, could that be another way of kind of, you got your race to the bottom, fine, that happened, but then making money and making that margin from other revenue streams could be a way of approaching it.
Well, there's not a lot more room that the rates can
go
in.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, once there's nowhere else to go, you've got to change the model.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that can then happen.
But it's like clients, they must want transparency as well. They must want, like, and yes, they want value, and obviously it really affects the current person sitting there wants to know how cheap they can get it. But
so in the interest of transparency, do you think someone involved in this should be leaking the names of the people involved to the press? Is that one way to stop this? Once the names of the agency and the client are out there, does that not stop this happening?
No, I think it's just going to... It's not them, it will be...
Just
it'll
be quiet
be people.
About how we do it in the future.
Yeah.
Really?
It'll just force practice even more underground around than it already is.
Yeah.
It just needs some really... I mean, actually probably need some sort of legislation or some sort of official law around guidelines and how we go about doing it. That has to be spearheaded probably from the MFA again.
Perhaps the Privy Council could set up a royal charter.
Absolutely.
Deals.
We need a...
There's just so many dodgy deals. It's me. Oh, okay, I'm dirty.
You like it.
And I don't want to work in media with all these dirty players.
And not in a good way, ain't it?
No, in a bad, dirty way.
Well, talk about bad dirty news also this week that Kyle and Jackie O are finally set to leave the airways after I think 13 years working together and over 50 consecutive number one slots. Kyle Sandilands said they offered us, they being Today FM, offered us a very nice deal to stay on for a few more years. It's been a great company to work for. A lot of change is going to be afoot. Fitzy and Whipper have been threatening for a while. This is all reported in Umbrella. Down in Melbourne, Fox FM is losing Matt and Joe Show. And Nova down in Melbourne is losing Hughesy and Kate. Lots of change in the foot. Let's talk first about Kyle and Jackie O. 13 years together, an absolute stalwart, a controversial, but stalwart of the radio show. What do we make of their performance over the last 10 years? What do we make of what they've contributed to the station?
What I can say from my Hungarian perspective is they are the only actually not only radio presenters but media personalities in Australia who even me in Hungary have heard of.
Really?
So you've heard of Kyle and Jackie O in Hungary?
Yeah, exactly. Bernd Lemon who made that point about the royal baby.
Oh, no.
There have been various kind of controversies around their show before. They always say things and get banned.
We'll come on to the controversies. I mean, it's the point is there's been a huge, they've made a huge contribution to the fortunes of Austereo over the last decade.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing for Austereo. Personally, they are, they've been there for so long, it's time to freshen it up. They are in their ivory tower, if I may say. In terms of, being too controversial for clients, some clients. So
yeah.
I'd say there's some cash that's not going to the network because of that reason. And, they don't come to agencies. They don't go to advertisers and do the commercial side of things, whereas the other DJs will. And I think it just gives Southern Cross Austereo the opportunity to change that.
It feels very sudden. Do you think Southern Cross Austereo would have been planning this for a while?
Yes. There's been so many controversies over the last year, 2 years, that I'm sure they've had a backup plan or they've been working on plan B. So, yes, even if they haven't got the personalities lined up as yet, I'd say there's a plan in play.
Yeah.
It reminds me of like when you are going out with somebody and you've been going out and you know it's going to end and you've got to get in there first. It's like, oh, I want to be the dumper, not the dumpy. And that's what it strikes me of. And they just wanted to be the dumpers.
They wanted to be the dumpers.
Yeah, they didn't
want to be the dumpers. 10 years, 50 on top, let's go before the bow breaks.
I think so, yeah. And I think so, and they want it, because they are so being so explicit about it being their decision. And I think after 10 years and such a great track record, they probably don't need it to be as so defensive in their bowing out. It's kind of when using Chris Moyles, when those guys decided to leave Radio 1 Breakfast Show, it was very much a we've had an awesome time, we're leaving. It's not, it was just very different sentiment. So I think that they want to be the jumper.
And I might be completely wrong, but have they been losing share marginally over the last?
Yeah. Although they've kept number one.
They've kept number one,
yeah,
but they have. So
I think it's just a bit stale.
Yeah,
it's been the same thing.
It's the same old, it's kind of like, oh, did that fit in? Oh, another
stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, Carl's got lots of different projects on as well, working with Channel 9 and, you know, playing during the day and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I think it's just, yeah, he wanted to change too.
And we mentioned the other main controversy of, I think, about a year ago, that made global headlines. It can't be ignored that that between them that they've been right up there in contributing to what's become a real culture of controversy, arguably, in the Australian radio market. There was the lie detector segment where a girl live on air talked about being raped, and there was the comments about Magda Sublanski going to a concentration camp, and Carol was actually suspended for that. That the on-air attack on a female News Corp journalist that led the advertising boycott, that they've been at the forefront of what has been a real period of controversy. Alan Jones, to name another one, a real period of controversy in Australian radio. Do you think the stations are looking to draw a line under this? Do you think they're looking to start fresh, perhaps? Or do you think that we'll see more of the same?
I reckon they're breathing in. I reckon they won't be panicking about having to do a 10-second delay on the broadcast.
Which is what was happening right now.
Yeah.
There was a 10-second delay on the broadcast. And so presumably someone sat there with a red button. So if something goes wrong, they just literally cut it. And just kind of going, we'll be back in 10 seconds, here's a sting.
Yeah, but it's like content. Sorry, but content is one thing. But as Lucy said as well, at the end of the day, they have to make money. And if... because of their controversies, all the advertiser are not falling into the radio station, and basically it's like you literally spend money on your content but you get nothing in return.
I think it's also a bit of a PR thing as well, like being known as the radio show that has the most controversy and has the most kind of risque content is a real big distinctive asset, and it's a draw for consumers. So if that wasn't, if that they don't have that level of kind of riskiness to watching it, then I think that might hinder some of their numbers, because there is a draw around that. So I don't know if they would come back with a they may be less risky, but I think on that spectrum of riskiness,
yeah,
I don't think it'll be a staid, boring
morning show. Yeah, right. So I'm sure there'll be announcements in the next month or so.
Do you reckon Carl will go to another radio show? Though, so that's
no.
Been,
I think that's, well, certainly not breakfast. I'd say after what, 13 years or whatever it is, 8 years doing breakfast, they're pretty fed up with getting up at 4.
Yeah.
Time for a lion.
He's got his telly face on as well now, hasn't he?
Exactly.
What's his telly face?
Oh, that annoying, don't you just want to slap me face?
Well,
talking
about getting in shape for TV, our last news this week is Fitness First has partnered with Mardi Gras. An announcement from Pink Media Group said that the world-leading health club Fitness First today announced a sponsorship as a major partner of the 2014 Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras. Fitness First head of marketing, Anthony McDonough, says being involved as a major partner is an incredible opportunity for Fitness First. We have an exceptionally diverse member base and workforce, a number of whom are part of the LGBTQ&I community. Well, certainly where I work out, it's more than a large proportion. and this is great, right? It's great to see everyone like Fitness First connecting with Mardi Gras.
Absolutely.
It's a bit of a no-brainer. It's a great, two very synergistic brands that you could see working. I just think it's a really obvious, clear, brilliant activation. It'd be interesting to see how they turn that and make the most of that.
And as a client, great that obvious connection has now been made and that
they're
doing that
now. The idea is just going to abound around that.
I think it gives them a real opportunity on the build-up to Mardi Gras and being able to tap into the mindset and the behaviour of people who are getting ready.
Are you talking about Christine?
We are sparsely entering into no carb zone for the next 4 months until March.
We will only go into low carb 5 weeks out. Thank you very much. We'll be bulking up before then.
How was your Subway today, Bruce?
I didn't have a Subway. I had a wrap, and I had, it was hummus and two kinds of meat and some Tallulah. So it was kind of, it was carby, but it is Friday, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, I think it's a great partnership. I'm really, really interested to see, and hopefully they'll get us involved in some of the activations around that.
And a great opportunity to activate. There are loads of really
interesting
ways you could activate a sponsorship like this, right?
I mean, as Nicola said, what's great about Fitness First is there is a build-up and there is a post-conversation that can be had. I guess from a kind of comms point of view, the thing about scale and how can they take it beyond just associating with Mardi Gras. So they still feel there's an opportunity to expand that to people that are not all those participating, but beyond that, beyond the reach of that. So if they do that and how they
beyond
do that,
those just participating in the pre-Mardi Gras preparation.
Yeah, you basically.
I think you will find it's not just me. I think you'll find I'm like the person who least does this. There are people who spend a year getting ready for Mardi Gras.
But they are trying to leverage on it already. I read it that they are actually preparing some boot camps before Mardi Gras. So.
Chris will be signing up.
Yeah. What do you mean will be signing up?
The ones on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
But I think activating beyond just Mardi Gras would be like giving it a bit of scale, because I think there are things like Mardi Gras which are the numbers are quite limited when you actually kind of put in context of other activations. How we turn that into broadcast media and make that a bigger opinion about the brand.
And even just how we can leverage from a content point of view across their owned media network, because through Active, they've got an incredible amount of owned media essentially that they sell, which they could leverage for their own purposes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's all we got time for this week. A big week of discounts, departures, and diets. There we go. And also news that on Monday morning, very excitingly, Ten are announcing or launching their new breakfast show. Lucy, tell us a bit about that.
So Wake Up launches the day before Melbourne Cup, so Tuesday actually, day before Melbourne Cup, and there will be big fanfare behind it, so it'll be interesting.
So Monday morning is the day to be watching.
Yeah.
And we will be watching. In fact, the PhD strategy team will be live blogging from my living room on Monday morning. So to follow the fun adventures of Wake Up, stay tuned to the blog where this PhD cast will be posted. That's it. That's all we've got time for this week. A big thank you to the PhD casters who were Lucy.
Hello.
And Nicola. Goodbye.
Goodbye
is traditional at the end of the cast. Nicola.
Goodbye.
Yeah. Oh, so well practiced. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, goodbye.
Thanks, Christian.
Goodbye.
I was Chris Stevenson, and that was the PhD cast. What is it we said?
I was saying the Beatles. Hello, goodbye, whoever it goes. Jesus.
And we say goodbye. Goodbye, goodbye. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening.
To get more from PhD Australia, you can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, or find us on Google Plus @PhD Australia.